You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet.
And story is everything.
We host tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell. You just been listening to Hot Texas Rhythm Band.
Yeah.
Or is it Swing Band?
Swing Band out of Dripping Springs, Texas. And we are so delighted to see you. You are joining us tonight live, or you're catching this later as a podcast on audio or video. This is episode 181. And Jim, we were away last week.
We were in Hollywood, California.
Oh, my goodness.
We were Galaxy Press's Black Tie event, a once-a-year deal where the finest science fiction writers of our time are there, plus the finest illustrators.
It was an amazing night. And next week, we'll have a full house with all guests from that very event. And you'll hear about it in more detail. And we were so thrilled to have Tom Swearingen guest host for us again.
He does a wonderful job.
We should just let him take the show, I think.
Yeah.
We should just give him the reins. He does a wonderful show. And his guest was singer, songwriter, and movie music inserter. It's not quite the right word, but Chantel Ogden, and she places music into movies. They had a wonderful conversation. That was episode 180. And you can catch it on all of your favorite podcast platforms. And we're just happy to be back with you tonight. And who's our guest tonight?
Tonight, Ron Elkham. He's the author of The Legacy of a Lie.
And welcome, Ron. And Ron, where are you tonight and what's happening?
Well, first of all, thank you very much for inviting me to appear on your show. I really appreciate it. I've been looking forward to it for some time. I'm in Rochester, Minnesota, which is in the southeast corner of the state. And right outside my window right now, there's hail hitting the house. We are under a thunderstorm warning. And about 15, 20 miles south of us, there are tornado warnings. So it's going to be an exciting evening in many ways.
I'll be broadcasting from the basement here.
Yeah. Well,
I may have fingers,
to. Yeah, fingers crossed that this will, you know, do its thing and just pass over you. But I think, Ron, what you're trying to tell us is we might lose you, and it might be for a moment, or it might be for a longer period of time. You might just disappear, and we understand the internet and weather don't always go well hand in hand, do they?
No, we sometimes lose power.
Well, we got this great book, so we can read from the book. It's no problem.
Exactly. But we really want to do it with Ron. So while he's still with us, honey, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about our guest, Ron Elkham.
Tonight's guest, author Ron Elkham, is a professor emeritus at Winona State University, where he taught various advertising and mass communication courses for 25 years. He has been published in the Lake Country Journal and several professional academic journals, and has attended seminars on fiction writing at the Iowa Summer Writers Festival. Tonight, we are discussing his book, The Legacy of a Lie, the first book in a three-novel series. He and his wife, Sharon, reside in Rochester, Minnesota, and enjoy time with family and music of all genres. Very good.
So, Ron, music plays a big role in this book, one of the many kind of important roles that that keep the story together. And I think that you and your wife, Sharon, have a little bit of an interesting music background. Would you share a little bit about that with us?
Well, Sharon and I met in a music conducting class in college. And I was working on my master's degree and she was an undergrad. And we saw each other on the first night. And I got stuck being a grad student, I got stuck having to talk to the professor after class with the rest of the grad students. And she told me later that she walked as slowly as she could. She stayed as long as she could at her locker. And as soon as I could escape the professor, I was roaming the Performing Arts Center trying to find her. And so it's been, we've been together for well over 50 years now.
Oh, congratulations. Right. Well, as you share that story, it reminds me of a similar story from the book where Peg tells the story of meeting John. They weren't in a musical. They were in Romeo and Juliet, I think. Mm-hmm. And he had scrawny legs in tights. And he was fencing. He was there because he was part of the fencing team. But they kind of took a liking to each other. But it took a long time, didn't it, before I think they finally meet at the cast party. So when you're sharing that story right there, I thought, oh, I wonder if he took their story and he just kind of, you know, moved it around, put it in Romeo and Juliet.
Well, you know, there's an old adage in writing, especially in novels, that all writing is to some degree self-autobiography. And so while there are certain events that none of these events actually happened in real life, but some of them mirror things. When my daughter first read the book, she called me up and she said, "Dad, I know where that happened."
Oh, that's cute. Do you want to ask him about his writing career?
Yeah, let's talk about your writing career a little bit. You know, you've been in the academic world for a long, long time. So we know that you obviously have, in your job, in your professional career, have done a lot of writing. But when did you actually start writing and the kind of writing we're talking about tonight?
About 25 years ago. And they started out with family vignettes, stories about what it's like to be looking at a sunrise over the lake at the lake cabin. Those kinds of short stories. None of them ever got published, with one exception. I revised one, and it was recently published in the Lake Country Journal, which you mentioned. And so my writing began there. It wasn't until about 2 or 3 years before I retired, which has been 10 years now, that I began to take the writing craft seriously and went to the Writers' Summer Festival in Iowa and read books on it, looked at videos about it, talked to people about it, joined writers' groups, and really took the craft of writing seriously. Mm-hmm. And as a result of that, I now have one essay published, a couple of others in the works, and a novel published, and a sequel to it in the works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, that reminds me, this event we were at, Ron, last Thursday night, it was an awards show. And so we got to hear each person who had won, you know, give their acceptance mm-hmm. speech. And remember, Mike Strickland said, "Better late than never." And he had talked about, he had started actually getting some opportunities. Was he 60 or 65? Yeah. And he just, it was a very great speech because everything he said, better
late than never.
Than never.
Better late than never.
I take great heart from, I think it was Grandma Moses, who started painting at age 80. So mm-hmm. yes. And of course, the closer I get to 80, the younger 90 seems.
Well, that would be true.
90 is the new 70, isn't it? Or something. 90 is the new 60.
I think it's
Well, let's see. With your background and the music part of your background as well, how would you say your background has informed informed your writing or influenced the writing that you do?
Well, I've been a musician all my life, involved in choirs and bands, and I taught music for a number of years. And so my music has always been part of my life, and also my wife's, Sharon, very much as well. And I believe in drawing upon what you know as a writer to inform your writing. And while the characters in Legacy of a Lie are musicians, the story is really about them as people against the backdrop of what their lives are, which is music.
Did you ever have your own band?
No, I did not. Well, I take that back. When I was in college, we had the So What Else Is New trio, a folk group, and a string bass, a banjo, and a guitar, and me singing, which was not always a good thing. But we did have that, and I did play. I played semi-professionally, done a couple of gigs with a polka band, and also played with the Duluth Symphony Orchestra in Duluth, Minnesota.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I've had a varied career in music.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, when we were talking the other night, was the trumpet your specialty, or did I misunderstand that?
No. The trumpet was my special instrument, and my father always claimed that I made a real sound on a trumpet when I was 2 years old. Now I think that was a proud papa talking. I don't think I really did that.
One of the things that you shared, you know, all of our guests have to fill out, we ask them to fill out a pre-interview form, and it just helps us get to know the guest a little bit before we actually meet. And one of the things that you wanted to chat about tonight was about being an author working with low vision. And we thought it was fascinating when you shared with us when we chatted the other night. We'd love for you to share with our audience a little bit about what does that mean, low vision, and how have you learned how to not let it stop you?
About 15 years ago or so, I noticed that my eyesight was beginning to dim, and that I couldn't recognize things and people from a distance. And what it turns out was that I have what's called age-related macular degeneration. And that was over a period of time, my central vision deteriorated. And so it became more and more difficult to read, more and more difficult to write, though I managed up until about 2 years ago when my central vision went completely away. So I have peripheral. I walk around. I don't usually bump into things. And I can function quite normally. If you didn't know that I have this problem, then you wouldn't never suspect it. But it turns out that I can no longer read. I can't take a book, which I love to do, and hold it and read it. And so I became quite depressed about 2 years ago. It was very, because I thought all I have left is sitting on the patio, which was nice, but not a way to live. Mm-hmm. And a woman from the Minnesota Services for the Blind, who was more visually challenged than I am, came down and showed me things that I could do on the computer that I did not know was possible. And that allowed me to begin to write. The first draft of a story or anything you write is the brain to the fingers. I took typing in 10th grade. And so you just type. It's, you don't think about it. You just automatically write it. It's in the rewriting and in the editing and in the crafting of the dialogue and the crafting of the story that becomes the problem. And this woman showed me things, and between what she showed me about how to enlarge everything on the screen and work with it, and that combined with text to speech, after I write something, I can go in, enlarge the entire screen so I can make out what's going on. And with text to speech, I listen to what I wrote, and then I could make the corrections. It slowed my process a little bit, but I'm very grateful that that she came down to show this to me. And if anyone is from Minnesota is listening and watching this tonight or in the future, I want to say thank you for paying your Minnesota taxes, because it funds the Minnesota Services for the Blind, and it gave me not only my writing life back, it gave me the world back. And for that, I am extremely grateful. And so that's what's happened to me. And so I, you know, it became a kind of my mantra that I had the choice of I could adapt or I could die. And I chose adaptation.
Yeah. And I think, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, with all that said and your challenges, how long did it take you to write this great book?
Well, it depends upon when you want to start that. the original idea came, that's probably 15, 16 years ago now, where the germ of the idea for the book came about. It wasn't until I got in the last couple of years of my retirement, before retiring, that I had a chance to and the time to really sit and think about it and work on it and develop the craft. Altogether, probably of actual writing, you know, probably 8 to 10 years from really starting it in earnest to it actually being a published book.
Mm-hmm. And I think your wife, Sharon, has become a very important sort of partner in the editing and the, you know, moving it along, right, from your first draft through all of the processes.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Without her, she functions as the backdrop, as the she does things that I can't do. Writes emails for me and then edits them, handles some of the business. I can't look at a set of numbers and tell you what they are because they disappear. And sure. So she handles the numbers part of things. Mm-hmm. But yes, without her support, I couldn't do what I'm doing.
Yeah. Well, you know, Ron, you and Rendezvous with a Writer, we have a very important group in common, don't we? And I'm guessing that a lot of Blue Cottage Agency Clicks by Madison fans are watching us tonight on Facebook. We're not able to see you, so we want to say a big hello and thank you for joining us, and thank you for sharing, and thank you for any comments that you're leaving. We will catch them after the show. And we're going to now give a little shout out to our sponsors, Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison. Are you a writer? They are standing by to assist you, right, Ron? Just like they assist you. And here's
Absolutely.
A special offer created for you. And when we come back, we will get into our first in-depth look at tonight's book, The Legacy of a Lie. So don't go away. We'll be right back. Authors, welcome home. Every author needs a website, a home base for their brand. Professionally showcase your books and brand with a custom website landing page starting at $369. Bluebookshelf.com. It's a great feeling to be home. Contact the Blue Cottage team today to get started.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. We're talking with Ron Elcom and this book here, The Legacy of a Lie.
It's really good, by the way.
Quite a book. You know,
it's really good, readers. You need to read this book.
Bobby's going to read a passage here from the beginning about Father Sean McDonough. But could you kind of set that up a little bit for us, Ron?
Sure. Father Sean McDonough, a Catholic priest, has just learned that his sister, Marit McDonough Malone, has just died. And that is where we pick up the story that Bobby will read.
This is a great book, and you need it needs to be read aloud. I'll just tell you, I was reading a lot of it aloud as I was reading it. Father Sean McDonough softly replaced the phone in its cradle. He bowed his head and let out a deep sigh. Fighting back tears, he crossed himself and whispered, "Rest in peace, sis. Rest in peace." Bending, he retrieved a small brown paper package from the credenza's lowest drawer and placed it in the center of the desk. His desk chair groaned under the sudden addition of his weight. The priest did not attempt to open the package. Instead, he reached for a family portrait, cradled it in his hands, and sat staring at the image. In the picture, his 16-year-old self was seated between his mother and sister, while his father stood behind the trio. His father's chin jutted out and up, giving him the appearance of a diplomat. Instead of a friendly smile, he assumed the face of a dignified and meaningful person. His mother's kind smile and the memory of her gentle hand on his shoulder warmed the priest's heart. He smiled at the twinkle in his sister's eyes, recalling the giggles they had shared right before the flash and click of the camera shutter. He chuckled out loud at the memory of boisterous laughter when the harried photographer told them the sitting was over. He returned the photograph to the desk, picked up the package, and gently ran his fingers across the top. Two snips of the scissors and the strings holding the wrapping fell away. Inside were two sealed envelopes, one addressed to him, and a larger second envelope addressed to Allison Williams at the Williams Lofton Law Office. Seeing his sister's delicate handwriting brought tears, blurring his vision. "Sean, please deliver this package to my attorney, Allison Williams. Thanks, M."
Okay.
The legacy of a lie. Just one passage.
Could you share a little bit about the inspiration for the story, Ron?
Well, the inspiration was one spring and summer in two separate locations. We were out for dinner one night, and a young woman who was talking with, I think, an uncle, caught my attention. And she had this most beautiful face. I can still see her face in my mind's eye. And this happened to have happened, I don't know, 15, 18 years ago, whenever it was. And that face has stuck with me and haunted me. A few weeks later, I was at a choir concert. My wife was singing in the choir. I was not in that particular choir at the time. And two people were handing out the programs, and one of them was a young 13-year-old or so girl, and her face stuck in my mind, and I can still see these two young women. I have no idea who they were. Neither of them were, the older girl was not in any class that I taught. I never did know the younger girl at all, but the visions of them stuck with me. And I kept thinking, there's a story here. There's got to be a story here, but what could it be? And so it was, well, what if they were sisters? But how could they be sisters? Because they live 50 miles apart. Well, what if one was adopted? And then the characters began to interact with me, and they started to tell me their stories. And sometimes they were very open forthcoming on what was going on and with them and what had gone on with them. And sometimes they were quite coy, especially Anna, the young girl, the 13-year-old. She was particularly coy. And I remember one time sitting down with a notebook and longhand, actually conducting an interview with Anna to try to figure out what was going on. And I'd put R colon and ask a question, and then A colon, and she'd answer me. Usually the first answers were, "And why do you want to know that? What business is yours?" And so on. And so these characters became real. And I think most novelists will tell you that the characters on the page are their friends. They know them. They are real to them. To the rest of the world, they're imaginary, but to us, they're real. And so it came from that question of what, there's a story here. What if they were sisters? And that was the inspiration for the, that's where the story started. And, you know, a thousand what ifs later, the legacy of a lie.
For those of, why don't you also just give our listeners a little bit of an idea of when and where it takes place? And you've written it in three acts. Maybe talk a little bit about why you chose to kind of follow that kind of outline.
Sure. It's set in Minnesota, in southeastern Minnesota, on a fictional town named Elston, right on the Mississippi River. And and it also takes place on the North Shore, north and east of Duluth, along the North Shore of Lake Superior. The water plays a really important part in the formation of the character and the worldview of the people who live there. With a river, you don't know what's coming from upstream. You don't know what's you're going to encounter there. And you can't see really where it goes once the water goes around the bend. And so you don't know where it's taking you. So there's this feeling of constant motion. The lake, always there, sometimes calm, sometimes quiet, always majestic, always mysterious, and sometimes very angry. And so the people who are on the shore cling to the shore. And along the North Shore, that shore is a billion years old. You can reach down and pick up a small pebble that was at one time within the core of the earth. And so there's this solidity, this power, this majesty of the lake that follows, that contrasts with the movement of the water, where the water will take you and where it came from. I chose the three act format because in the first part of it, the characters and the question and the problems that they occur are introduced all within a relatively short period of time. But that conflict is not resolved until they're in their 30s and early 40s. Well, a lot of things happen to people between age 22, 13, and 40-something and 30-something. And so the center part of the act two of the book is really a series of these events that shaped the people during that part of their life until the problems and the forces that came to bear and were started at the beginning all converge, and they have to deal with those problems, which is of course an act three in the climax.
I'm so sorry for my coughing. We're both getting over congestion, and I really apologize to the listeners too. I'm really sorry for that.
No problem.
Well, we got, now music plays a major role, and it's nice the way you worked it all in, you know, and the story centers around, well, the story doesn't center necessarily around the music, but maybe the music around the story, but you did a nice job weaving that in.
It ties everything together. Do you want to ask
the characters are musicians, and so they live the life of the musicians. But the story is not about the music that they make. Yeah. It's how their lives and what their struggles they have with music as the background, as the vehicle for their lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It seems that there are three main themes that you weave throughout the story. Would you like to address those?
Sure. there's an old Cherokee legend about a grandfather talking to his grandson about life. And the grandfather says, "Within me are two wolves. and one is angry and vicious and fights and greedy, he is evil. And the other wolf is kind and gentle and will fight if he absolutely has to. But he represents the virtues, the good things in life. Mm-hmm. And they are constantly at war within me, as they are within everyone. Everyone has these two wolves. And the grandson sat silent for a while and then said, Grandpa, which wolf wins? And the grandfather smiled and tousled his grandson's head and said, the one that I feed. Mm-hmm. And that is the crux of the yeah. conflict of almost all the characters within the novel. And so it's about anger that needs to be resolved. It's about fear that inhibits action, inhibits forward motion. It's about cynicism that can cloud one's judgment and has to be overcome. Mm-hmm. It's these three things, all in the context of the Cherokee legend and the struggles that the characters go through.
And they do. And there are some wonderful lines of dialogue, which we won't share because they'd be spoiler alerts, as the characters begin to realize that they have this conflict. It crystallizes, especially for Kay, it crystallizes and it begins to put her kind of on a road of recovery, I guess, they each have their pathway, don't they, towards yes. redemption, towards yeah. redemption.
And
they're all
a lot
marvelous.
Of Your characters, a lot of family dynamics yeah. there too.
Yes. And your characters are all, we're going to talk about characters in another moment, but they are all so very engaging and compelling, every one of them, from some might call minor characters, and yet they play major roles. I find the characters, I'm excited that this is going to be the first, that this is the first of a trilogy, because I'm hoping some of these characters we'll see again. Sometimes trilogies may go another direction, but these are compelling enough characters that I think we're happy not to say farewell to them.
They're my friends.
Yeah, they're your friends. What did you want to ask?
Well, I look at this definition of a lie. You know, a false statement made with a deliberate attempt to deceive. And I'm thinking, as I read the book, a lot of our characters probably don't think they're lying, but they leave out facts. They always hold back something.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, mm-hmm. is that a lie?
Mm-hmm. It's an omission. Mm-hmm. Or we have a couple characters, yeah. right, Ron, that can't. They're obligated yeah. not to tell all that they know.
Yes. And I had to do some significant research on that to really get a feel for it. We have an attorney who knows a lot more than she can release because of a client attorney privilege, and so she is bound by legal by laws and also by ethics to not reveal some of the things that she knows, even when when revealing it could help a person, but she can't reveal it. And then there is the priest. Who is bound by the confessional, and things that are told in the confessional to him, he cannot, under horrible pains in his, within his belief system, of excommunication and worse, and so he is confined by the bounds of that, and yet he has to deal with the crises and the problems of his nieces. And that becomes a problem for him that has to be resolved in some way.
Yeah, yeah. Why don't we're just going to have another moment before we take our last little break, but I'd love you to tell us how the title came about. And I'm holding up to the camera. It's a beautiful cover a graphic cover, and I'll try not to put my fingers over the little kayak there. But if you could maybe tell us how that Legacy of a Lie title came to be, and a little bit about the graphic design on the cover.
The title didn't come about. I had a working title that did not fit at all, and it didn't. I think I spent an entire afternoon going through possible titles until I was at the end of the editing process. We're going to go into the design phase next, and I didn't have a title. And I think I must have spent a whole afternoon just working titles until it became, well, there are lies throughout this thing. There's a major lie, but there's a legacy, and that legacy can be bad, it can be good. And so the Legacy of a Lie, the cover of the design work, of the cover, is that is a picture of Minnesota water. It's a picture of Lake Superior, and there's a small yellow canoe or boat that's below, right in the center of the page, out on the water, and it symbolizes, if you could look very closely, the two girls are in the boat. And they are struggling through the dangers and the problems of their lives to reach the safety of the shore. And that is the design or the meaning behind the design.
Mm-hmm. And superimposed or very faint, but you can see it in the background, is a musical score, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And it is a score of the Spinning Song from Gounod's opera Faust. And it is indeed the score from that. And that particular song plays an important part in the story.
We're going to step away. Okay. We're going to step away for just a minute. And Ron, we're so excited you're still with us. No tornadoes or hail or anything yet.
No, the hail has dissipated.
We're going to step away for just a moment to tell you about one of the places you can order the books from many of our author guests, including tonight's guest, Ron Elcom's The Legacy of a Lie. Find their books on the Out West Shop affiliate page on bookshop.org. And when we come back, we'll shift gears a little bit, and we're going to meet some of tonight's featured cast of characters. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. We're talking with Ron. With Ron Elcom and The Legacy of a Lie. You know, we asked this question kind of before. I think you kind of answered it, but I'll ask it again. Do these some of these characters ever surprise you?
Well, you know, it's really strange because these characters just kind of appear as you're writing, and all of a sudden the uncle appears, and it's. It's a very strange phenomenon, but there are three of the characters that they're minor characters, but they're important characters, and they're also a sort of an archetype, and I pay homage to them. And the first of those is Paul, Paul Williams, who's a journalist, and the Paul represents to me anyway those journalists who dig deep. Who go for the truth, who don't just go for the quick scandal line at the top. They dig deeper and deeper and find out not only what, but how and why. And so that's an homage to all those journalists seeking the truth. Father McDonough is, I'm a preacher's kid. And so I have grown up with clergy. I'm not Catholic, obviously, because he's a Catholic priest. But he represents to me, and it's an homage to all of those clergy, both Protestant and Catholic, whom I've known over the years, that through their compassion and their love of people, as well as their love of God, to help people in crisis and help them through it. And so it's an homage to those, to the help that these, that clergy can and do give when it's really, really needed. The third minor character who plays a major role is Dr. Elizabeth Kaiser, and she's a college music professor. And she has, this is an homage to all of those music teachers who start by teaching the beginner where middle C is on the piano and listening to the plunk, plunk, plunk of Twinkle Little Star or the scratching of the violin, and teach not only the notes and the techniques of the instrument or of singing, but also give life lessons along the way and use music to help teach those life lessons. And so those three characters are really archetypes of people who have, they're not specific people that I have known, but they are people that I have encountered.
Mm-hmm. And then you have, of course, a few others. Tell us a little bit about Nikki.
I love Nikki. But Nikki's, she's a very beautiful Southern California valley girl look. You think Rodeo Drive, and you have Nikki. Yeah. She's very beautiful, and she's a good singer, but she's not good enough to be a professional. And she is jealous of those who are. And she is also vindictive. Mm-hmm. But to me, because I love Nikki, there's more there to her than I know.
Well, she has a lot of talent. She truly does have a lot of talents.
Yeah. Sometimes it's more fun to write the bad guys than it is the good ones, right?
Sometimes it is.
Is there somebody you would like to ask about from our little list?
Well, we have to ask about Merritt. Who is Merritt?
Yeah.
Okay. Merritt is Father Sean McDonough's sister, Marit McDonough Malone. And we don't, the only, because she dies, it happens in the first chapter, so it's not really
spoiler alert. Yes.
It's, and so, but she dies, and so we can only know who Merritt is or was through the memories of people that knew her and loved her. And mm-hmm. So who she is comes out through the novel. She is a major character within the novel. That has a profound influence on Anna and Kay.
Mm-hmm. 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 Let's see. I'm looking at time. You know what, Ron? We're just going to go right into, so we have enough time. Tell us where people can find you and follow you and purchase your book. We'll start there.
Okay. I have a webpage, ronelcom.com, and the books can be ordered through there. They're available at independent bookstores and at Amazon and Barnes & Noble. They're available everywhere, but you can order them and get to there either directly to one of the bookstores that you prefer or through my website. I can also be followed on Ron Elcom Author on Facebook and on Instagram. Things that are happening, events that will be happening, will be posted there as they go along. But that's where you find me, and that's where you can order my book.
And we'll just do a little shout out to Independent Bookseller Day, I believe is this Saturday. So wherever you get your books, or you hear about this book and you go to your local independent seller, they can order it for you. And just Saturday is a great day to support independent booksellers out there. And Ron, what are you working on next?
Well, there is a sequel that I expect in the next 5 to 6 weeks or so to be sending to my editor. And it is a sequel to this. And yes, some of the characters reappear, and there are a couple of new characters that come in with a different twist, where the legacy of a lie, the main protagonist is Kay, the older girl. Mm-hmm. Yes, Anna has struggles, and she's there. The second book, which I don't have a title for yet, right? The working title is ?? There will be a title on it eventually, but I don't have one for it just yet.
It's a secret now.
It's a secret, yes. Mm. And the main character, the main protagonist there will be Anna.
Okay. All right. Let's see. Do you belong to any writing groups?
I have in the past. I don't currently. But I have been part of the Rochester Writers Group here, and they helped early on in some of the development of the story. And I have, when I ever managed to get to Brainerd, where we have a cabin up in the Brainerd Lakes area, where the Blue Cottage Agency is located, and I do go to the Lakes Area Writers Alliance up there. Mm-hmm. But I'm not a formal member of any of them at this point.
Mm-hmm. I think Jim has a quote he's going to read. I'm handing the book back over to him. It's fun to actually read the quote right from the book. That was really fun earlier.
You know, this is a little different. I usually read a quote that's funny or humorous or perhaps philosophical. But this time it's a little different. This is a lullaby by Johannes Brahms. And it's a song a mother would sing to her child, and it helps tie the story together here. And I actually can't tell you any more because it might be a little bit of a spoiler alert. But it goes like this: lullaby and good night, with roses bedight, with lilies overspread, is baby's wee bed. Lay thee down now and rest. May thy slumber be blessed. Lay thee down now and rest. May thy slumber be blessed.
Well, Ron, we're delighted that you were able to join us tonight. I know we had scheduled a couple other times and that just didn't work. And here you were. We had perfect weather. Everything was, the stars were aligned, and it was wonderful to have you. Jim, hold the book up one more time. This is a wonderful book. We couldn't put it down, The Legacy of a Lie. I actually had to read it twice because I didn't want to forget anything about it. It's wonderful. So thank you so much, Ron, for being with us tonight. And again, thank you to all our Blue Cottage friends, right, Ron, who we just know have tuned in tonight. We so appreciate you being with us and supporting the show. We also want to thank Sam Hassan, again, Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, Hot Texas Swing Band. A special thank you to our guest, Ron. This is episode 181. It will repeat immediately after on Facebook, on LA Talk Radio's YouTube page, Rendezvous with a Writer Facebook page, and in a couple of hours, the audio will be up on our Podbean page, and it'll go out to all the major audio podcast platforms. Next week, I still have a bit of a cough. I do apologize for that. Next week, we will have a full house. Who's with us next week, honey?
Oh, man, it's the folks from Galaxy Press.
Yes.
We have John Goodwin, Emily Goodwin.
And we were with them a week ago in Hollywood for this black tie gala event honoring the winners of the L. Ron Hubbard Presents Writers of the Future, the best new sci-fi and fantasy short stories of the year. We met all of the winners of the authors and the illustrators, along with a host of best-selling sci-fi and fantasy authors. It was an amazing event. And next week, as Jim said, we'll have John Goodwin and Emily Goodwin with us. And
winning author Michael Kuster and the illustrator, winning illustrator Nathan DeWert.
Yes, we will have those two winners with us next week. So do join us again.
As we always say, it's always a great day out west.
Keep writing.
We'll keep reading.
And we'll see you down the trail. Good night, Ron. Thank you so much for being with us tonight.